Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to talk to you today. I'm going to give you a brief insight into the work of FONS and what we have learnt from working with clinically based nurse-led teams, and then talk a little bit about a new programme of work of ours called Creating Caring Cultures. So FONS is an independent organisation that has supported nurses for more than two decades. We work with clinically based nurses, helping them to use innovative, knowledge-based approaches to improve patients' experiences of care. The patient experience is much talked about now, and we believe that this goes beyond receiving good clinical care to feeling safe and being cared for with kindness and compassion. Over the last 5 years, we've supported more than 80 nurse-led teams, providing care to meet diverse needs across all healthcare settings UK-wide. During the last two decades, we've obviously developed the ways in which we've worked, and this has been guided by experiences of working with the nurse-led teams in clinical practice, listening to the voices of patients, changes in healthcare policy, and also developments in theories of how you improve practice. So starting sort of work in the 1990s, our work focused very much on the sort of research utilisation and sharing and supporting implementation into practice. However, we began to realise that sort of the linear logical approaches to change do not acknowledge the complexities of practice, and they often don't result in sustainable improvements. These approaches are based on the assumption that once nurses have new knowledge, they will automatically implement it into practice. And I think you probably all agree that that quite often doesn't happen. Clinical guidelines are probably one of the best examples of this kind of approach. So as FONS moved into the new millennium, the focus of our work started to change and largely centred on supporting nurses and nurse-led teams that had a good idea for improving practice, often with a clinical focus. So things like perhaps pain management or nutrition. This work involved working with teams in practice, helping them to understand what needed to change and identify how this change could be achieved, rather than telling them what to do. During this time, we became aware that whilst focusing on a clinical issue could be useful for the staff, as it sort of provided a hanger upon which they could relate to, there's also a danger that such initiatives can sometimes be seen as one-off change events, and so they're perhaps limited commitment to sustaining the change or moving on to look at changes in other areas of practice. We also began to increasingly recognise the factors that enabled successful change and development, and these include the active involvement of clinical leaders, effective strategic support, the use of a wide range of methods and approaches that engage staff, giving them the opportunity to consider and talk about the views and perspectives of themselves and others, and to explore their role and responsibility in relation to the practice change. Essentially, this is about working in ways that prepares the workplace culture for change, sort of in a way of making the soil fertile. Sometimes our ways of working have been met with surprise, suspicion, and indeed resistance. And this is at the outset. It's not uncommon for us to hear staff say, just tell us what to do and we'll do it. But as they become aware of the barriers to developing practice and also some of the opportunities, so comes a recognition of the need to get the workplace culture ready and to work in these different ways. But in our experience, acknowledge the complexities of practice, coupled with our commitment to person-centred nursing, has enabled changes in attitudes, nursing practice, and the prevailing workplace culture. So just to give you an example of one of the projects, this project focused on improving meal times for older people in a hospital unit. The staff team started by photographing the mealtime environment, observing meal times, and talking to patients and relatives about their experiences at meal times. They then held discussion groups with small groups of staff so they could involve as many people as possible and started to make sense of the evidence that they had collected and started to identify actions. And initially they made these actions quite small and achievable so that they feel they could sustain momentum and gain a sense of achievement. Staff were also encouraged to be involved in a variety of ways, and this varied. So some members of staff were keen just to get involved at perhaps trialling new cutlery and crockery so that that would enable older people to be more independent at mealtimes, whereas others were more keen to look at reorganising the ward routines to ensure that all the nursing staff were available to help at mealtimes. Through this work, the team were able to demonstrate improvements in the eating environment, the presentation of foods, and indeed increased choice at mealtimes for patients. But beyond this, it began to become evident that the approaches that they had used were starting to impact on the wider aspects of care. So staff started to think about what does choice really mean for patients? And this became apparent, for example, the morning routine. The morning routine changed, so no longer did the late staff come on and start tutting if a patient wasn't up and dressed. Actually, staff started to ask patients when they would like to get up and if, in fact, they would like to have a wash. Nurses were also heard asking patients what they would like to wear. Staff started to talk about getting to know patients and how they were starting to use this information to inform their care. As an organisation, we believe that nurses practice with the intention of giving the best possible care. And through our work, we meet with staff who are enthusiastic and committed to putting patients and their families at the centre of care. And we see some fantastic examples of caring, safe and compassionate nursing practice. But we also know that enabling change is not easy, and that examples of good practice are set against a backdrop of challenges, including health reforms, changes to workforce and education, demographic changes, new technologies, and indeed concerns about deficiencies in practice. Whilst examples of poor practice are not representative of healthcare, they are unacceptable and do highlight factors which left unresolved can lead to a deterioration in care. These factors are often complex and can be succinctly described as relating to the natures of places where healthcare is provided, the process or way that care is delivered, and the values, attitudes, and behaviours of the people who are part of the caregiving. In essence, all these factors make up the culture of healthcare, and if we want to assure the quality, compassion, and effectiveness of patient care, then finding ways to create and sustain cultures that are caring is paramount. Reviewing the aspirations of healthcare providers, it's clear that creating environments that deliver healthcare that is effective, caring, and compassionate is a top priority. However, I've already said that achieving this is not easy or quick, and we believe that change that is implemented at pace with only the end point or outcome in focus will have limited success. And whilst there is an ever-increasing body of information and resources about the what and how of improving care, and we've already heard about the change model that's been recently launched, and that's one of the examples, in our experience, we've found that healthcare staff often lack the skills and the confidence to enable individuals and teams to work with these new ways. And so, building on our experience of the last decade, FONS is about to start a two-year pilot programme called Creating Caring Cultures, with the aim of helping nurse-led teams to create healthcare workplaces that are conducive to the delivery of high-quality care and that provide a supportive place for staff to work. We strongly believe that if patient experience of care is going to improve, that staff also have to feel cared for and valued. So in caring culture, staff will feel valued and will be more able to take responsibility for what happens in practice, and consequently patients and families will experience effective, compassionate and safe care. So as part of the programme, we'll be initially working with two teams. These teams have been nominated by directors of nursing who have acknowledged that there are some concerns about the cares on these wards. Taking part in the programme will involve a partnership with FONS for 2 years. FONS will appoint an external facilitator who will work with the ward leader and also internal facilitators that have been designated by the organisation. All the phases and activities will use tools and techniques, methods and approaches that are supportive but also enable critique and encourage learning in and from practice, that build relationships that enable inclusion and involvement of staff, patients and their families. We acknowledge that only working with two projects means that this is small-scale work. However, we strongly believe that it is important to work at the level where healthcare is experienced, but it is also most effective when receives organisational support. This programme is also provided us with an opportunity to link to the Nursing Standard and Patient Association care campaign, which will be spoken about later. So what will this programme look like? Well, through our work, we've identified that there are four key interlinking areas that enable teams to refocus their practice on patients and families. And these are values and attitudes, context and culture, leadership and enabling, and supporting learning. So the starting point will be with the people, so that's staff, patients and the families, helping them to explore and understand the values and attitudes that influence practice, helping them to create a shared vision or a purpose. I suspect many of you who visited hospitals have walked onto wards where the ward philosophies have been displayed. But I wonder how often the ward philosophies are spoken about after the first time that they've been initially developed, or how whether they are reviewed as new staff start to join the ward, or in fact whether care is ever actually evaluated against them. So we will work with people to help them identify what is important to them in their practice and their care, but we'll also provide them with opportunities to see if what is spoken about happens in practice. So, for example, if staff say that using person-centred language is really, really important to them, so they wouldn't want to hear patients being labelled, we could use observations of practice and observations of team meetings and also review documentation to see whether this is actually being realised in practice. Involving staff in these processes provides opportunities to learn in and from practice. Such activities do not necessarily have to require a vast amount of time, but they do require facilitators with the skills to enable staff to engage in reflective conversations, helping them to develop a greater self-awareness, helping them to give and receive feedback, and also to challenge poor practice. From our experience of working with many project teams, challenging poor practice is something that nursing staff find particularly difficult. When we talk about challenging poor practice, the word challenge seems to be interpreted as one that is about confrontation and being critical, rather than providing an opportunity to learn and move forward. So we'll be working with staff to develop some of these skills. Culture has already been spoken about this morning, and I think it's we're all expecting it to feature greatly in the Francis report. So what does culture mean? Well, culture can be described as the way things are done around here, and it can also be defined by the patterns and rituals of care. And I was interested when Sally was talking about what is common practice. So is common practice about the patterns and rituals in care that become the norm, and how often do we actually look at those? A couple of examples. I visited a stroke unit once and was being shown around by the clinical nurse specialist. When we approached the end of the unit, it was the dining room, and all the patients were sitting around small tables. It was actually quite a pleasant environment, but I was really struck by the fact that every one of the patients was sitting with a bright blue apron on. I wondered whether patients had actually been asked if they wanted to wear the aprons, and even if they had been asked, whether they thought the correct answer was yes, and so they wore them anyway. Was there really any choice in that decision? When I fed back what I deserved to the clinical nurse specialist, he was actually really surprised and said, "I didn't notice." Similarly, I visited a unit where senior staff were aware that they had a high use of incontinence sheets, but it was a practice educator that actually started to question the practice associated with this use. She discovered that when patients were helped to get out of bed in the morning, and they were sitting in the chair, the staff would whip up their nighties, and the women were sitting on the pad with a bare bottom. She heard staff say things like, "You don't want to create any washing for your relatives, do you?" And in fact, she then also heard patients asking to sit like that. So again, you start to question, is this something that the patients really want, or are they just fitting in with the rituals of practice? So examining what it's like to work in and be cared for in a ward or unit should help us to reveal information about the place where care takes place and how this influences how care is experienced. So starting to unearth and really look at some of these common practices with a new pair of glasses. But successful change might not only be about embracing new ways of working, but it might also be about letting go of old patterns and rituals. Similarly, closer examination of the practice context, including scrutiny of day-to-day practice and the process of delivering care. We've already talked about knowledge and skills of staff and skill mix. We talked about the 12-hour shifts, and I can only say in our experience they are difficult to work with in terms of releasing staff for development time. We're also looking at leadership and resources for care delivery, which will help reveal the realities of practice in the ward and unit, not only focusing on what doesn't go well, but really starting to focus on what goes well. Things don't go well for no reason at all. It doesn't happen by chance. And I think there's a lot that we can learn from looking at what goes well, working out why that is, and seeing how we can make that happen more often. And I think in this day and age when nurses perhaps start to feel a little bit downtrodden, I think starting with a positive note could be a useful way forward. But when we're working like this, we will involve staff. It's not necessarily about collecting more data, because I'm sure, again, you would all agree, much data is already being collected about staff. But we would work in a way that involves staff in collecting and analysing data, as again, as a learning opportunity. I recently visited a trust where we met with a senior nursing team, and they were all really, really keen to share how hard they were working to embrace the vast number of changes that were being sent their way, and outline a raft of audit and measurement that was being undertaken on a regular basis. There was absolutely no disputing how committed the staff were, but yet there were still concerns about some of the care. I have to be honest, just listening to all the activity was exhausting in itself. And I started, I don't know whether any of you remember the Duracell battery advert with the bunnies that were banging the drums. This image just came into my head because I almost felt that everybody was running around, all banging their own drum, but actually nobody was listening and the beat wasn't actually hitting anybody. It felt somehow that people were being lost in the process. So although in this instance, copious amounts of data was being collected, there was actually no opportunity within this for staff to own it or make sense of it in relation to their own practice. At no point did staff have to say, this data is about me. So in this case, FONS would work with staff to firstly help to create opportunities to be involved in the collection and analysis of routine data, and to explore ways that you can share that with staff that will help them to make it personal. Secondly, though, there is a need to develop the necessary skills to do this. For example, we've worked with teams who want to collect patients' stories. And so we know that that is a useful way of staff listening firsthand to patients' experience of care. However, we've discovered that staff don't find it easy to do this. When patients share experience, staff often want to explain why things went wrong and why things happened like that, rather than really listening and hearing to what the patients are saying. So again, we'll work with staff in practice, helping them to develop these skills. We talked, the morning sessions was talking about leadership, and FONS would recognise the essential role of clinical leaders, especially the ward managers, in facilitating and enabling change. Their involvement in creating and sharing the vision for care is absolutely vital, and also their role in encouraging staff to be active participants in change, leading by example, and also giving staff permission to do things differently. But with change coming at a pace, many ward managers may not have the time to consider how they can work most effectively. We recently supported a ward manager as part of one of our other programmes, which was focusing on improving infection prevention and control. Part of this programme involved bringing the leaders together, and one of the activities that they undertook was to reflect on their preferred style of facilitation using the situational facilitation framework. A few weeks later, this ward manager shared a personal reflection with the group. She talked about how using the framework and the subsequent discussion had enabled her to recognise that she was very directional. And this recognition began to explain some of her frustrations at work. For example, things not getting done when she wasn't there. She talked about piles being this high when she came back from holiday. She realised that she created the agendas for the ward meeting, and the content was primarily about her giving information and the staff all being passive recipients. But when she did ask for ideas, strangely enough, there was silence. She also went on to reflect about staff recruitment, which we've also talked this morning, and admitted that she had become conscious that she was actually recruiting staff that she thought would be passive and followers. And she realised that there was no succession planning in place. She did all the audits, and she said, perhaps that was on the pretense that I was making life easier for staff, but actually she started to think, am I just making life easier for myself? So as a consequence of this, she started to work differently, which was quite a shock for the staff at first. They kept looking at her as if to say, what's going on? When are you going to tell us what to do? But by being persistent, staff started to work in different ways also. They started to create the ward agendas, and they started actually to come with to her with ideas, and she then started to work with them in a supportive way to help them to lead these initiatives. And so we'll be working closely with ward leaders to provide both support and challenge, helping them to explore their own effectiveness so that they can help others to become more effective in their work. We'll be helping them to find opportunities to identify and realise engagement of staff and patients, to start being intentional and seek opportunities for their own and staff learning, and help them to develop knowledge and skills in leading and facilitating change using some of the tools, methods and approaches that are readily available. And so, just in summary, we believe that working systematically with people and values in practice settings is much more likely to challenge and alter workplace and practice culture, thereby enabling care, compassion and person-centeredness to flourish, especially when aligned and supported by corporate strategy. This involves starting where people are at, helping them to explore and understand the care experience and their role within it. Working in ways that enable staff to envisage what future practice might look like and to identify what actions they need to take to get there. Reflecting, reviewing and evaluating will be an overarching and ongoing part of this work that will instill a longer-term commitment to monitoring outcomes for patients, staff and organisations. We look forward to sharing the outcomes of this work with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.